Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 258, and it's 17 April, evening of 17 April. Yep, pretty late. Quite a few stories tonight, I think maybe 8, 9, 10, couple of 155 millimeter stories. So we'll get started with what's going on in Israel. This is Times of Israel from 17 April, this from the staff. Prime Minister Netanyahu, despite allies' advice, Israel will make our own decisions on security. Obviously, this relates to the attack from Saturday from Iran on Israel and whether Israel will answer that attack. Supposedly, they were going to. They weren't going to. Anyway, that's what this article is kind of about. So following meetings between the British and German foreign ministers, which were in Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed on Wednesday to the cabinet that Israel make its own decisions and do whatever it is necessary to protect itself, even though it's contrary to the advice offered by its allies. British Foreign Secretary David Cameron and German Foreign Minister Baerbock both arrived in Israel today, on Wednesday, for a flying visit in the wake of Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel last Saturday through Sunday, which it launched some 350 attack drones and missiles at the country. Both Germany and the UK have urged Israel to show restraint in the aftermath of the attack, warning that any additional direct hostilities with Iran could send the Middle East spiraling to an all-out war. Israel, however, has vowed to retaliate against Iran, saying it cannot be allowed to attack without facing repercussions. Appearing to respectfully reject Baerbock and Cameron's counsel, Prime Minister Netanyahu told a cabinet meeting that the two had all kinds of suggestions and advice, that's a quote, and while it was appreciated, Israel would nevertheless, quote, make our own decisions and the state of Israel will do everything necessary to defend itself. Acknowledging Israel's right to make its own decisions, Cameron told the press in Israel on Wednesday that while it is clear there will be retaliation against Tehran, he hoped it would be carried out in a way that is smart as well as tough, and also does as little as possible to escalate the conflict. Germany's Baerbock was more vocal in her opposition to Israel's plan to strike back at Iran, but stressed nevertheless that her country remains in full solidarity with Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu's office said earlier during his meetings with the German and British foreign ministers, the prime minister reiterated that Israel would maintain its right to self-defense. The two visiting diplomats also met earlier Wednesday with the President Isaac Herzog from Israel, obviously, and Foreign Minister Israel Katz, with all the conversations focused on the potential of Israel retaliation. Both Baerbock and Cameron are due to attend a group of seven foreign ministers in Italy on Wednesday afternoon, where, among other things, they'll discuss imposing new sanctions on Iran. And that's it. Next, Emmanuel Fabian, Times of Israel, 17 April, IDF hits Hezbollah air defenses in northeast Lebanon after drone attack wounds 18. The IDF said Wednesday, today, that it carried out an airstrike against a site belonging to Hezbollah's air defense unit in northeastern Lebanon's Baalbek, B-A-A-L-B-E-K. Hours after Hezbollah carried out an explosive drone attack on northern Israel, wounding 14 soldiers and 4 civilians. In a short statement, the IDF said a fighter jet struck Hezbollah air defense infrastructure north of the city of Baalbek, almost 100K from the Israeli border. Whoa, it's pretty up there. According to Lebanese media, the strike took place near the town of Iaat, Iyat. This area of Baalbek has been identified in the past as a Hezbollah stronghold. The strike marked the sixth time amid the war in Gaza Strip that Israel has struck Hezbollah positions in that area. The airstrike deep in Lebanon came in response to the explosive drone attack on the northern border town of Arab al-Arasham Aramshe. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. Hezbollah claimed responsibility for this attack, saying it targeted a building being used by Israeli military with guided missiles and explosive-laden drones. Almost done here. According to the IDF's initial probe, Hezbollah fired two anti-tank missiles at the town before launching the drones, which hit directly a community center. According to the IDF, 14 victims were soldiers, including five listed in critical and serious conditions. Four civilian victims were all lightly hurt. The terror group said the attack was in response to the killing of three of its members, including two commanders, from Israeli strikes in southern Lebanon a day earlier. So far, the skirmishes on the border has resulted in 8 civilian deaths on the Israeli side, as well as the death of 10 IDF soldiers and reservists. Hezbollah has named 278 members who have been killed by Israel during these skirmishes, mostly in Lebanon, but some in Syria. And I'll stop right there. Next. Now we'll get to CENTCOM X. I kind of purposely waited to do this until this part. 16 April, yesterday, Red Sea update between 10:50 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. local time. On 16 April, CENTCOM forces engaged 2 unmanned aerial vehicles and ran back Houthi terrorist-controlled areas of Yemen. There were no injuries or damage reported by the United States, coalition, or commercial ships. That's it. And while we're on that subject, this is from Justin Katz, Breaking Defense, 16 April. U.S. Navy says 1 billion in munitions from ops in Red Sea, from the Secretary of the Navy. Of course, we know him as Carlos Del Toro. Today, he told lawmakers that the Navy is out at least 1 billion in critical munitions because of recent operations in the Middle East. A shortfall the Pentagon is banking on congressional supplemental to help replenish. Here's a quote from the Secretary of the Navy. We are currently approaching 1 billion in munitions that we need to replenish at some point in time. Del Toro told the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense. Another quote. So therefore, the over 2 billion that's been provided in the supplementals directly is direly critical to our Navy and Marine Corps to be able to replenish those munitions and continue the types of defensive measures that we have done in the past 6 months now. The question of munitions was on the top of the mind for lawmakers at today's hearing following the weekend's attack by Iran, which we know launched more than 300 drones, ballistic missiles, and cruise missiles at Israel. The United States, UK, Jordan, and Israel collectively defeated most of the incoming Iranian attacks, but the large-scale assault, as well as the Secretary's comments, put into stark relief the strain that the Navy's SM-2, SM-6, and SM-3 stockpiles are under. Here's kind of it gets a little odd here. As the strain on the Navy stockpiles has intensified, Del Toro in recent months has called out industry for using its profits to, quote, goose its stock prices. I don't know what that means, rather than investing in additional capacity. This message, which the Secretary repeated as recently as last week, has gained favor with at least one top lawmaker, Senator John Tester, Democrat, Montana. And this guy's pretty powerful, this John Tester. As a chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Subcommittee on Defense, he is effectively one of the most influential and powerful people on Capitol Hill as far as defense industry is concerned. During the hearing with Del Toro today, Senator Tester echoed the Secretary's warnings to industry about failing to invest in capacity. Here's a quote from the senator. He said, the fact that some of these corporations are using the money to buy back stocks without building capacity first is incredibly irresponsible. I'll stop right there. And those missiles, again, were SM-6, SM-2, and SM-3. I guess that's what the ones they've been shooting all this stuff down from the Houthis with in the Red Sea. In Gulf of Aden, drinking some water here. All right, next. Here's a story about kind of an update on the U.S. Army going over there to Gaza to build this pier. Haven't heard much about that, but USNI, Navy transport with equipment, personnel for Gaza pier back home after engine fire. This is from Heather Montgilio, 17 April, USNI. A Navy ship on its way to Gaza with parts for a temporary pier returned home after experiencing a fire. The Navy said on Wednesday, today, the USNS Second Lieutenant John P. Bobo, that's the name of the ship, experienced a fire in the engine room on Thursday, April 11th, last week, while on its way to the Eastern Mediterranean Sea with equipment and personnel for humanitarian efforts planned via a temporary pier in Gaza. The crew extinguished the fire with no injuries. The ship returned to Jacksonville, Florida, on Wednesday for an assessment. The fire is under investigation, according to a statement. This ship, the Second Lieutenant John Bobo, is one of three transport ships that left for the Mediterranean starting in March last month as part of the Army-led joint logistics over-the-shore mission to create a temporary pier to allow more humanitarian aid in Gaza. The military sealift command ships Bobo and the USNS First Lieutenant Lopez departed earlier this month with Army and Navy personnel and equipment that can build a roll-on, roll-off discharge facility. The United States sent Ready Maritime Administration Ready Reserve ship, the MV Roy P. Benavidez, with the Army pier infrastructure last month. The Navy statement did not indicate if there would be a delay to the floating pier as a result of the Bobo's delay. A defense official told USNI News the Navy was assessing how quickly it could repair the ship and if they would need another ship to transport the Navy gear. A couple more paragraphs. As of Tuesday, the pier is expected to be operational in late April, early May. That's from Major General Pat Ryder, Pentagon spokesman. Components of the pier are expected to be assembled in the next 2 to 3 weeks. The date of IOC and initial operating capability seems to have shifted, with the DOD saying mid-April at first and now late April or even early May. Here's a quote from him. Major General Ryder, what we said when we announced this was that is that we would be operational within 60 days, and we are still on track for that, he said in a press conference on Tuesday yesterday. All right, that's it for CENTCOM. Now we'll go to UCOM. One, two stories from UCOM. Yeah. 155 stories, both of them. So here we go. We've been talking about this. Czech PM, Prime Minister, bullish on ammo plan for Ukraine, envisions 1.5 million rounds in a year. We're talking about 155, of course. Tim Martin, Breaking Defense, 17 April today. A campaign led by the Czech Republic and financed by international partners to source artillery shells for Ukraine could lead to the delivery of 1.5 million shells by April of 25. That's a year away. And that's according to Czech Prime Minister Fiala. Czech government has already secured 500,000 shells, Fiala told the Hudson Institute on Tuesday, but there's no reason why we can't deliver 1 million more in the next 12 months. The ammunition initiative involves the Czech Republic collaborating with a number of suppliers from countries in Africa and Asia. They're purchased with funds from friendly nations and eventually delivered to Kiev. The source nations, which were not identified, are nervous about selling the shells directly to Ukraine, but they will sell them to the Czech Republic. So far, orders have been financed by 18 Western governments, including Belgium, Canada, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Sweden, and first deliveries to Ukraine are expected in June, which is not too far away. Prime Minister Fiala said that 500,000 shells can now be provided to Ukraine. Here's a quote from the Prime Minister. He says, I believe our initiative can simply cover the ammunition gap, at least until Europe can produce enough ammunition. Let's see. Prime Minister noted that the last 2 years, the Czech Republic alone has delivered 1.3 million artillery shells to Ukraine. That's incredible. More broadly, the Czech Republic has supplied Ukraine with 874 pieces of equipment covering infantry fighting vehicles, helicopters, rocket launchers, and, quote, other weapons since the conflict started. He added that the Czech Republic Armed Forces has already trained 4,300 Ukrainian soldiers, and they plan on training another 4,000 more. That's it. End of story. Now, here's the second story about 155 millimeter, also by Tim Martin, also by Breaking Defense, from yesterday, not today. Lithuania and Rheinmetall signed an agreement for a 155mm ammunition plant. Lithuania and the German manufacturer Rheinmetall signed a memorandum of intent today to build a 155mm ammunition factory in the Baltic state. This agreement covers mutual obligations and intentions regarding the earliest start of construction for the proposed facility. Did this statement. That's a press release from Lithuania's Ministry of Economy and Innovation. The statement did not say where the facility will be built or how many 155-millimeter ammunition shells the plant will produce. Lithuania's Prime Minister Simonte, S-S-I-M-O-N-Y-T-E, Ingrida Simonte said the new 155-millimeter production factory will be important for Lithuania, Ukraine, and the entire region. Lithuania has given a lot of stuff to Ukraine also. Here's kind of the list. This year alone, Lithuania spent 84 million euros on assistance to Ukraine and delivered equipment including 155-millimeter ammunition, M577 armored personnel carriers, drone jamming systems, Carl G., Carl Gustav, anti-tank recoilless rifles, and ammunition for the Carl G. Last month, Lithuania's parliament also approved plans to increase defense spending in 2025 to 3% GDP, which is, of course, higher than NATO's 2% target. Throughout 2024, this year, Lithuania also plans on training 400 Ukrainian troops as part of Operation Interflex, the multinational training program led by the United Kingdom. And that's it for UCOM. A little bit UCOM here. Next story is Argentina inks deal to buy 24 F-16 jets from Denmark. We kind of hinted around this story a few episodes ago, and it looks like it's a done deal now. This is from Pedro Plyer, P-L-I-G-H-E-R, Defense News, 16 April. Never done a story from him before. The Argentine government has completed the purchase of 24 F-16 fighter jets from Denmark. Argentina's president and defense minister announced on Tuesday. Yesterday, the deal for Block 15 aircraft was finalized during defense minister's Luis Petri visit to Denmark alongside the chief of general staff of the Argentine Air Force, Major General Fernando Luis Mengo, and a government delegation. This contract is worth $320 million U.S. dollars. It includes, of course, 24 F-16s, reconnaissance pods, training armaments such as AIM-9X and AIM-120 missiles. The U.S. government has approved this aircraft transaction. The Danish Defense Minister Lund Poulsen described the sale as part of restructuring his country's air force, which is replacing its fighters with the F-35, in addition to donating some of the equipment to Ukraine. And here's a quote from him. In close cooperation with our allies, we have donated 19 F-16s to Ukraine, and now we have sold 24 F-16s to Argentina in a good process that has created valuable ties between our two countries. And that's it. Two articles left. We'll be done. What am I doing on time? 18 minutes. No problem. So here's kind of a not a great story. Connecticut lawmakers to grill the Army, Lockheed Martin, about job cuts at Sikorsky's helicopter plant. That's, of course, in Connecticut. And this is because of the canceled FARA, which is the Future Attack Reconnaissance Aircraft. Of course, Sikorsky was trying to get that contract. They didn't get the FLRAA, so they were trying to get this one. And then, of course, a month or so ago, the Army canceled it. More water. So here we go. Valerie and Sina, 17 April today. Connecticut lawmakers are not happy with Lockheed Martin Sikorsky's plan to lay off 400 employees as the company reels from the cancellation of the Army's Future Attack Reconnaissance Aircraft Program. That's FARA. And that's from Representative Joe Courtney, Democrat, Connecticut, toll breaking defense today. I don't think those cats were thrilled when they didn't get the FLRAA program. The Army canceled FARA in February, arguing that procurement of this reconnaissance helicopter was no longer the best path forward. However, Congress has protected funding for FARA in the FY24 spending bill passed in March so the money can be used to safeguard engineering jobs at both Sikorsky and his competitor, Texas-based Bell, Courtney said following a House Armed Service Sea Power and Projection Forces subcommittee hearing. From Joe Courtney. Here's a quote from him. The Connecticut delegation has questions about why, with that appropriation in hand, this happened, he said, adding that both he and fellow Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro, top Democrat on the powerful House Appropriations Committee, will be seeking answers from Sikorsky and the Army. Courtney said he was notified about the job cuts last night, Tuesday night. Here's another quote from him. When the FAR program was canceled, we knew that the engineering team at Sikorsky was the one that would be most directly affected by it. The company will need engineers to execute the new UH-60 Blackhawk modernization effort that the Army hopes to begin in the wake of FAR's cancellation. Of course, Sikorsky makes the Blackhawk also. A spokesperson for Lockheed Martin Sikorsky confirmed that it would have to reduce positions in its Sikorsky's business segment due to FAR cancellation, but declined to detail the total number of positions eliminated, stating only the layoffs would amount to less than 1% of the total Lockheed workforce. A spokesperson has said, we intend to retain as many roles as possible to meet national security commitments and preserve the U.S. rotary wing industrial base. Army officials have argued that the cancellation of the multi-billion FAR program reflects technological leap made in drone technology, which they say the Army is better suited for reconnaissance mission than a piloted scout helicopter. That's not good. Well, let's end on a good story. Let's end on a great story. How about this? L3 Harris, this is from Defense Post, Justice Domingo, 17 April. L3 Harris to produce more night vision goggles for the U.S. Army. Of course, we're talking about the EMVGBs, Enhanced Night Vision Goggle Binocular. A superior piece of equipment. Can't get enough of these things, so we'll end it on a good note here. So L3 Harris has signed a $256 million contract with the Army for the production of the Enhanced Night Vision Goggle Binocular, EMVGB. The deal is the first order on the program's full-scale indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract. I think they call those IDIQ, which the company estimates will reach $1 billion over 10 years, money well spent. The Army will use the EMVGB to enhance troop situational awareness at night and in low-light environments, and incorporates fused white phosphor and thermal technologies for precision targeting and identification capabilities. And that's what it is in a nutshell. It doesn't use the green tubes like in normal night vision. It uses the white phosphor tubes, which are superior. And it has thermal too. It can blend or you can use thermal. It's a superior piece of equipment. If you look through those, they're fantastic. Moving on. About 13,000 of these are currently in service with the U.S. Army. It is also capable of switching from white hot to black hot when used in thermal and outline modes and preserving accuracy in all battlefield conditions and in light levels. You can even use them the day for thermal, which is, you know, thermal in the day. L3 Harris chair and CEO described the EMVGB as a critical solution, ensuring U.S. Army soldiers stay ahead of their peer adversaries, which is true. Our continued partnership with the Army and internal technology investments will keep this system ahead of the threat for years to come. It is that good. It is superior. That's it. 23 minutes. Very short episode, but full of good stuff. So that's it. Episode 258 is in the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.